I said he looked like Ted Lasso.
Yes.
And wanted to be very clear that he was Burt Reynolds. Their defense is good enough, and maybe by then their offense is good enough.
Hey, Weekly Pulse on all things green and gold with the three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason William, ESPN Wisconsin's Alex Stroh. The Packers now 5-3-1 after a Monday Night Football loss at Lambeau Field to the Philadelphia Eagles. Yeah, the mime face of Jason Wilde kind of says it all. Second straight loss for the Packers. Another loss where the defense only allows 10 points, and the offense just can't get it done. Lot to dive into ahead of Packers-Giants coming up on Sunday and the Jameis Winston show potentially for New York. And maybe their future head coach and Jeff Hafley is visiting there. We'll get into all that. But Jason, hello. It's been a heck of a week.
Hi. It's been fine. I mean, fans are very upset, and I respect their frustration. I don't especially enjoy, and this is always the case, they're mad at the head coach, but they don't have a direct line to the head coach, so they're mad at us as proxy. I saw the picture of LaFleur at the Cheesehead TV training camp gathering, which I am not in. And people saying, oh, this is the soft group of reporters that cover your team. They want to be buddy-buddy with LaFleur. Look, I have a really good relationship with LaFleur. I was really proud of him the other day because if you think back to the training camp, they had a costume party. And he came to the podium with just the mustache. And I said he looked like Ted Lasso.
Yes.
And wanted to be very clear that he was Burt Reynolds. And I haven't told this on our show or anywhere else. And no need to clip it for social media. But they have these, I think I have one here. They have these, Funko makes these cans that then have the little guys inside of them. I don't know where I put Ted, but I gave him one and reminded him, hey, man, I know there's a lot of stress this season because, look, there is, right? But remember, you got into this because it's fun and, you know, try to channel. I know you weren't trying to look like Ted Lasso, but try to remember that you can do both. I know that's fiction, but you know, try to have some fun in the whole process. And then last week he dropped have the memory of a goldfish. And yeah. I was like, yes, that's my guy. But look, I think if you listened to Wednesday's press conference, in my own way, I got after him. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I knew he wasn't going to give up play calling. I knew that from the jump, but I also, if you're going to get up there and always say it starts with me, well, then what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do better? Which I think is a very direct, pointed question delivered the way I like to deliver questions, where I'm not being a complete prick about it, right? So, I understand. I just wanted to take the start of our program here and rest assured, like, the question may not be phrased the way you want it to be because you're pissed off that your team has lost two in a row and the offense looks like garbanzo beans. But that doesn't mean that I'm not striving to try and get you the answers you want. Now, that doesn't always work. Case in point, you know, when we had Chris McIntosh on our show, like,
yeah, great example.
I tried to do my job, and I think I did. There's a few mulligans I'd like to take back. But I tried, and I don't feel like I succeeded at getting really good answers. I got talking points. So it's not always going to work. But there was a lot of this on social media after the game.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Jason. I saw it, and I know you responded to a critique on the beat reporters and some of the guys that are in those press conferences. But after the game, I believe it was Matt Schneidman, directly asked him, do you believe you are coaching for your job?
Yes.
I don't know if you can get a whole lot more direct than that.
No. And look, I'm not where Matt is on that yet. Because, sure, you know, 2 weeks ago in Pittsburgh, They scored 28 second half points, and the quarterback completed 20 passes in a row.
And we were talking about him in the MVP conversation, right?
Correct. And what I would say to that is that obviously was a defense, as you heard, and we've talked about this, as you heard Mike Tomlin say in that game. Hey, I found Ted. There he is. There's Ted right there. Ted. As you heard him say in the halftime interview on NBC, Josh Jacobs is the linchpin. We have to make sure we continue to stop him. Yeah, you did not let Josh Jacobs beat you. You let Jordan Love throw for 360 and complete 20 in a row and beat you. So their task, what they have to do now, is with these defenses that are playing their safeties back and saying, we don't think you can run on us, even though you have the numbers, and we're not going to give up big plays. Run the damn ball effectively. And that starts with those guys up front who have not been good enough, and they know they haven't been good enough.
So that's where I wanted to start today, because I think I said to you in the last, if it wasn't last week or the week prior, it's been this season, I've said to you, sometimes it makes me feel like Matt LaFleur doesn't trust Jordan Love. And while I think there's still maybe some truth to that, it's pretty evident through the last 2 weeks, Carolina and now Philadelphia on Monday night, he's worried about that offensive line. That's why they're running all these line of scrimmage slash pre-line of scrimmage throws. That's why they're not letting things develop. That's why Josh Jacobs hasn't been able to get going to the level of last year. Maybe he's banged up a little bit because he's getting hit a lot. But I think the offensive line is probably most to blame at this point for some of the offensive shortcomings. And obviously, LaFleur is trying to adjust on the fly, thus some of those quick passes, quick outs, with the offensive line just not being in a place where we'd expect. And now, Elgton Jenkins likely lost for the year.
Yeah, look, I don't know. Like you guys, you know this. You know, Elton's been on our show. I really like him as a dude. I've never been to a strip club with him where the club was kind of lame, so I didn't have that experience with him.
Asked for a refund. Yeah, that was a great story this offseason. I forgot about that.
But I don't know. Like, guy's a Pro Bowl left guard. He has not been a Pro Bowl center, right? So is the drop-off significant to Sean Ryan now? We're going to find out, right? And we're especially going to find out in pass pro, because they got four first-round picks. I mean, the Giants don't have a lot going for them right now, but their front four is pretty good against as really pass good. Rushers. Not really very good against the run, but pretty good pass rushers. So my point is that, you know, I'm not sure that the drop-off is a cratering drop-off, but they're in trouble now if one of those interior linemen go down. Like, I think they – and I'm not saying Anthony Belton or Darian Kennard are great options, but if they want to keep backing those guys up as tackles, that means the next guy at any of the guard spots is Donovan Jennings, and the center spot is Jacob Monk. I mean, you know, you're in kind of treacherous waters there, like the Edmund Fitzgerald, which, again, I cannot recommend enough. The WITI Fox 6 documentary on that. I learned a lot. So to me, if they can get their protection going to a better degree, if they can run the ball, I talked to Gabe Neitzel this morning on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, and he said the quiet part out loud, saying that if they're gonna change their running style to such a degree, do they have to admit that maybe Josh Jacobs wasn't the right running back to sign? I'm hoping to talk to Josh today, because I do want to have a, you know, because that's the prevailing narrative, right? They're running out of shotgun all the time because Josh Jacobs prefers it. They're running duo more than they're running zone plays because Josh Jacobs prefers it. I would like to ask Josh Jacobs if that's truly the case. Because all the social media video breakdown folks and everything else have been pointing this stuff out. So, again, I want to go to the source. Bottom line is that if they can get the damn running game going and their offensive line starts playing not at a 2003 Tausch, Cliffy, Wall, Rivera, Flanagan level, and not a 2010 or 2014, Bakhtiari, Bulaga, Lindsley, Sitton, and Lang level. But something somewhere in that, at least in that same zip code, I think they're going to be fine. And I don't think that, I've said it a bunch now, I don't think they're a Super Bowl team without Tucker Kraft, but I think they're a team that can not only make the playoffs, but win a playoff game. But they have to get that part of their offense fixed.
Yeah, as of November 13th, they don't look like a team offensively that can make some noise. Defensively, they absolutely look the part. I mean, Monday night was a really, and it's going to get completely overshadowed, but Monday night was a really impressive performance by the Packers defense, slowing down Jalen Hurts, Saquon Barkley in that Philly offense, even though Saquon obviously had that big 41-yard reception late in that game. But a really good defensive performance by Green Bay. Offensively, it's just been really troublesome. Because I'd have to look at it, Jason, but teams that only allow 39 points combined in their three losses in the season, that's got to be a really low number for three losses. Has to be. I think it's 13, 16, and 10 in their three losses are the points they've allowed, and the offense just hasn't been able to keep up in those games, which is troublesome. So I want to go back to Matt LaFleur because, I mean, sure, it's a little bit of panic zone for Green Bay when you're being asked the two questions we already talked about on Sunday by Schneidman on does he believe he's coaching for his job, and then on Wednesday by you, I believe you asked it to some effect of you're not going to give up play calling, right? And something I've said to you before is if he was to give up or even ponder the idea of giving up play calling, I think that's when he admits he's over his head and it's done for him. But he is in a year that started with Ed Policy, the new president and CEO of the Packers, saying he doesn't like lame duck contract years. He has 2 years left in his contract starting this year. If he ends this year without a contract,
so does the GM.
So does the GM, right. Those guys would enter lame duck years. So there's a decision coming one way or another, no matter what, at the end of the season. That's at least the way I read it, right?
Yeah, there's a half measure that obviously they can do, right? Let's say they make the playoffs. Let's say they win a road game, right? Because as you just said, their defense is good enough, and maybe by then their offense is good enough to do that. Is that enough to give you a four-year extension? I don't think so,
probably
right?
Not,
you lose in the divisional round. What the alternative is to say, look, I think we went through a lot this season, right? I'm being Ed Policy here.
Sure.
You know, guys, we went through a lot this season. A lot of really crucial injuries. Obviously, we struggled with certain aspects on offense. We had a couple games where our defense was not up to par. Our special teams, what a mess that was. But I still believe in you guys and the direction we're going. I'm going to extend each of your contracts by 1 year. I'm going to add a year on so you're not in a contract year. You're not in a lame duck year. But, we need to do better. We need, you know, this is title town. This isn't divisional round town. I'm not comfortable giving you a four-year extension. You know, so I'm putting you guys on notice. You know, Goody, you said in front of the world that there was an urgency. Well, now I'm telling you there's an urgency. I don't think Ed sounds anything like that. I'm sure he would phrase it a different way. But my point is that I don't think it's either or. I don't think it's either, you know, clean house or give them 4 years onto their existing deal so they're under 5 years again. I think there's that half measure that would be an option. I have not asked Ed on or off the record if he'd be opposed to that. Last time I saw him, we did that whole thing where both of us were running late. So we did like the handshake where you just sort of slow down a little bit and sure. Say, hey, good to see you. And then you keep going. I was on the catwalk. I was on my way to the press box and he had just left the press box. But my point is that I don't think they're tied into, you know, blank or get off the pot now. That said, if this goes completely sideways, they've got five of their last eight in the division. I don't think, including Detroit, the way we've seen Detroit be inconsistent, it's out of the question that they can go 4-1 in those five division games and have no problem making the playoffs. That said,
the reverse also exists, though, right? Like they could also very well go 1-4.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is that if it goes the other way and they finish 8-8-1, then I think Matt LaFleur's in trouble. And I, on our program, I am more critical of the general manager than Tausch is. Mm-hmm. I still think he has done a very, very, very good job of assembling talent on his roster that we may overestimate, right? The wide receivers,
sure.
Certainly the offensive line. His two free agent signings have both been, I don't want to use the B word, but something busty. I don't know if I wanted to go busty there.
Yeah, you made that weird. I figured the B word was bad because I would go ahead and say Aaron Banks and Nate Hobbs have both been bad.
No, bust-esque. But anyway, I digress. The point is that I don't think he is above reproach here. So sure. I don't think they're going to blow them both out if they were to finish 8-8-1. But I wouldn't be entirely surprised if the coach lost his job then. Because then they would, you know, they would go from 5-1-1, right? And then finish 8-8. That would mean they would go 3-5 after their, or 3-7 in their last 10. Oof, that's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, it would be. A lot of football left to be played, obviously, but
yes,
the road ahead is fascinating now. After that loss to Philadelphia, 2 in a row, you go to New York. Please get a win. They're 7.5-point favorites on Sunday. They're likely facing the Giants' third-string quarterback in Jameis Winston, as long as Jackson Dart does not clear concussion protocol, which, as of Thursday, doesn't sound too likely. So we will see how this one goes. But the offense has got to find a way. And what's Matt LaFleur's pulse on play calling and decision-making offensively? Does he feel like a man who is trying to find some answers that hasn't had answers each of the last 2 weeks, or should we expect more of the same on Sunday?
No, I mean, you know, I brought up the memes of him ordering a pizza on his tablet. And I thought his answer to that, like assuring people that he's working his tail off. Yeah, I mean, of course, you better be, right? That's right. Why you're paid handsomely. But I thought his answer was very honest. And like, for as frustrated as everyone else is, imagine how frustrated he is then, right? Like, I'm not sure people pause and think about the fact that this is, you know, players always say your tape is your resume. Well, if their tape is his resume, he looks like he suddenly doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
Yeah.
Have a 13-point game and a 7-point game. So I think he's clearly dedicated to getting this fixed. Will he? Ray Rhodes was... at least said he was dedicated to getting things fixed in 1999, and he didn't get it fixed and he got fired. So I think they have too much talent. And I think the quarterback, who I don't think was an MVP candidate, compared to other quarterbacks that were putting like Drake May and et cetera, et cetera. I think he was not that far out of the conversation and he needed a few more really good games. And then obviously he hasn't had them. But to me, their quarterback is too good. Their weapons are too good. Their running back is too good. And their defense is too good for them to fall apart here. So yeah. I don't expect that to be the case.
So something I've observed, and I've heard a couple fans bring this up on your program amongst all the programs on ESPN Wisconsin, is maybe the difference in terms of collaboration and communication of Rodgers and LaFleur to Love and LaFleur. Like, for example, a timeout called in a crucial situation in a close ball game. We don't see LaFleur and Love communicating or talking about the decision that they're going to go for on offense. Or maybe, you know, Rodgers, at least the rumor mill, and I think we have learned this is true, is he would audible at the line of scrimmage if he didn't like the play call. Or he would audible in the huddle, or he would change the play call. Rodgers
yeah.
would.
Yeah.
Love seemingly doesn't do a lot of that. He gets the play call, he runs the play. Is there a level of collaboration, communication between the quarterback and the head coach that is lacking that could lead to some of the shortcomings offensively?
No. The difference is Aaron Rodgers is a four-time freaking MVP, and Jordan Love isn't there yet. He doesn't have the Rolodex to step to the line of scrimmage and say, well, this is a stupid play. We're going to run this. Now, we all have discussed, and again, for those that are not familiar, the when Love does this and you hear can, as opposed to inside zone this way.
Woof.
When they're doing that, most of the Packers and most of the Rams and most of the 49ers and most of the Bengals plays, most of the Vikings plays. I think some of the teams use kill instead of can, but they have an adjacency play. So I step to the line of scrimmage. I see Mike linebacker, Alex Strolf is in a specific spot. I see they're bringing their safeties down. I'm supposed to be running a run play there. I'm like, can. Everybody taps the sides of their helmets. It's now the pass play that is adjacent to that run play, and they throw the ball. Now, if you think about what they have seen defensively, they have seen mostly looks that would say they are preferable to run the football. And so when you see Jordan Love can't, and I do not, I'm sorry, I try to do my job. I work a lot of hours. You're welcome for my service. I'm not curing cancer. I'm not working in a factory, which is hard labor. I am here to say that I do spend a lot of time on this job. I don't have time to go through the first 9 games and chart all of the cans that you see Love do and then chart if it was a run or a pass. But I would be willing to bet, especially in the last 2 games, which I will try to find time to do, that when you see him do this, they run the ball because he's seeing the safeties back. So that's increasing the number of runs. Yesterday, I asked Jordan exactly that about, you know, the can plays. And I said, do you ever think about if you're supposed to can to the run, saying, F it, I'm going to throw it anyway? And he said there are very clear rules. And so he is at a point in his career now where it does give him options, right? It does give him some autonomy to look at what he sees and change the play. He is not Aaron blanking Rodgers. Like, think back to, you know, you were just a little tyke back then. You were like, I don't know, 16, 17, you know, just the cool kid at Denmark High School. Well, maybe not cool. But the play where Rodgers hits Jared Cook on the sideline in Dallas to set up the game-winning field goal.
Mm-hmm.
He drew that play up in the huddle.
Yeah, like a kid in the sandbox.
You're
going to
run this. You're going to run this.
Yeah.
Jordan Love is not there, okay? Maybe someday he is. Maybe someday he has had so much success that he can do it, but not right now. So the idea that, oh, there's not enough communication or collaboration. They collaborate every week on what plays do you like, Jordan? What plays don't you like? We'll throw that out. But he's a third-year NFL starter. And you know who didn't have that kind of autonomy when he was a third-year starter in the offense? Aaron Rodgers. He didn't have that kind of juice either. Now, could you argue eventually he had too much juice? Yeah. I think you could probably argue that. Is it possible that you could give Love a little bit more freedom? Yeah, I think that's probably true too. But again, this is what the kind of stuff I get frustrated with. Like all this stuff. And look, I grew up as a very black and white person. But in my adult years, and especially during parenting and marriage, everything is gray, man. And so it's never one thing. And we, you know, in this job, well, you know, I was on Amber and Ian last night with neither Amber nor Ian. with Aaron Goldhammer, and Hammer asks me, you know, the Packers have lost two in a row. Who's most to blame? That's not how I operate, right? But that's what we do.
Plenty to go around.
Right. And that's what we do, right? It's got to be this. Why did they lose? It's this guy's fault. Why are they not in the playoffs? It's this guy's fault. Well, there's a bunch of answers. But to me, like, if you chose the one about this offense struggling, it's the line hasn't played very well. And as much as we want to blame LaFleur, who decided to sign Aaron Banks? Who decided to move a Pro Bowl guard to center? Who has drafted Zach Tom, who is a great draft pick, Rasheed Walker, and Sean Ryan? Who drafted Jordan Morgan, who only wants to play left tackle, and based on his inconsistency, maybe should only play left tackle? Who drafted Jacob Monk, thinking Jacob Monk as a fifth-round pick could be Corey Linsley, who was a fifth-round pick? Those are all the GM's decision. And again, I'm not saying they're all bad picks. The Banks one does not look great right now. Not as bad as the Nate Hobbs signing. But, like, again, it's not – Goody doesn't – suddenly I say that, and then it's, oh, Wilde hates Goody, and he thinks Goody sucks. No. But let's call it for what it is. Their offensive line, in terms of the talent and the performance, has not been good enough. And that's those players' fault for not being better. That's Matt LaFleur and Steno and Luke Butkus for not helping them be better. But that's also the GM for selecting the guys he did or signing the guys he did.
That was a masterful 6.5 minutes. That was really good. I think when it comes to the love portion of that, I think the easy response would be, well, he's a $55 million quarterback. The expectations are higher, but I hear you on that because he is only a third-year quarterback, starter.
So is Tua. So is Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
And if you take all three of those guys and you ask me which of the three I want.
The answer is Jordan Love, pretty easily.
By a country mile.
Yep.
Right? But they're all that was the other thing I talked about with Aaron Goldhammer last night and Mike Zeno. Or Dan Zeno. I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with him. They were like, do they regret the contract?
No.
No, that's what quarterbacks cost now. Now, could you argue they don't deserve it? Yeah. But that is what they cost. I don't get to go to the grocery store and say, "Hey, this cinnamon bread that I like as toast for breakfast in the morning is too expensive. I want it to be a dollar less per loaf." That's the price is what the price is. And that's what quarterbacks are right now.
Yeah,
even ones answer. That aren't great.
That's true, though. And the Tua and Trevor Lawrence part, two guys that may very well not be on their current
right.
team next year, is a good point by you. All right, last thing before we wrap up, Jason, is the Packers head to the Giants. The Giants, I think, only have two wins on the year. They're not very good. They're dealing with a lot of injuries. They fired their head coach. They're going to deal with a third-string quarterback more than likely. This week, the Packers are 7.5-point favorites. I know you hate when I use this term, but nobody hates it more than Brian Bulaga on Green Bay Game Day. But get right game is the term that I often use. How can the Packers go into MetLife Stadium in New Jersey against the New York Giants, which also doesn't make a lot of sense? They should be the New Jersey Giants, and get a win, and we walk out of there feeling better about where the Packers are as they get ready for the Vikings the following week.
Yeah, you know, I'm not much of a prognosticator.
I know you're not.
And if I was a Packers fan, the one thing that would make me nervous here is that it is not a fallacy. There is a bump that teams get from firing their coach and the interim guy taking over, right? That is – the Packers for years were better at getting guys fired after they beat them. You know, I mentioned that to Tausch the other day. Wade Phillips, Chili in Minnesota. Like, it felt like they were doing that, you know, every couple of weeks. So that would make me a little nervous, but I don't think it's enough. Like, that they're not very good.
They're not
like,
a good team.
If they had Malik Nabers still, right? Dude's one of the best young receivers in football. Well, he tore his ACL. He's their he's more important to them than Tucker Kraft was to the Packers. So, look, let's be clear. Doesn't matter it's on the road. Doesn't matter they fired their coach. Doesn't matter what the Packers have done the last 2 weeks. You better damn well win this game.
Yep.
Right? I mean, Xavier McKinney called it a must-win game yesterday. That did not make it into my Channel 3000 coverage yet. I'm a little bit behind. But it must win. Again, the season's not over if you lose. That's what must win means to me. But in terms of if you want to be the team you think you can be, you lose this one, I'm calling in sick on Monday. And I'm definitely not looking at social media because somehow, even though I won't be there, I won't have asked hard enough questions after the game.
I can't tell that's bothered you at all this week. If they lose on Sunday, could we be talking about a Black Monday? Could Matt LaFleur be fired if they lose on Sunday?
I suppose anything's possible. There does seem to be a concern among the fan base.
Yeah.
And Tausch wants to pull this, and it makes me squeamish. But I think if right now, given his approval rating, if you did a poll, you only get to keep one, Matt LaFleur or Jeff Hafley.
Oh, yeah, I don't think it's particularly close.
He's getting destroyed.
Yeah.
But again, everybody loves the backup quarterback too, right? Like, Jeff Hafley, I think he's a great defensive coordinator. We've seen the impact he's had. I don't think Boston College is an accurate portrayal of what he would be as an NFL head coach. But history is littered with great coordinators who became head coaches, and they weren't so great. So be careful what you wish for. That's all I would say.
Yeah, specifically on the defensive side of the football, too. Like, think about the Brian Flores of the world.
Robert Saleh was a stud.
Spags in Kansas City?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a ton of examples specifically on the defensive side of the football. So it's a good point.
And I'm not saying that I have no idea what Hafley would be.
I don't either.
And I really like him, obviously.
And I think real quick, we'll agree. I think we both think he will be a head coach in the NFL, if not next year, within the next couple of years.
Yes, we definitely agree. We can end on you and I agreeing.
Live from Green Bay, Jason Wilde, channel3000.com. Jason, we will do this again next week ahead of Vikings-Packers at Lambeau Field.
Hey, what time am I on Green Bay game day on Sunday?
I got to do math. It is a noon kickoff, so you are on 10 o'clock central, 10 o'clock hour.
At least I'll be right here as opposed to remembering to come to the Tundra Trio.
All-time stuff by Jason Wilde a couple of weeks ago on Green Bay game day. Listen to Jason Wilde and Tausch, 9 to noon, each and every day. Sign up for the Jason Wilde newsletter, all of his Packers coverage at channel3000.com. Make sure you keep listening to us right here on Weekly Wilde each and every Thursday. Thanks, Jason.
Take care. Be good.